people fall in love with the classics in unexpected ways.
I was in a elementary school play production of The Odyssey when I was 8 years old.
The Siege of Troy ended after 10 long years.
It's one of my most vivid childhood memories. I remember both the thrill of getting to create a tinfoil helmet and being dressed up as a goddess. I remember the blinding of the papier-mâché masked headmaster using a broomstick handle.
Arise, Odysseus!
I remember that my sister was cast as Helen of Troy and I had an anxious time of thinking, is that going to be a much bigger part than mine? Ooh. I was a shy kid who just moved to a new school. I'm not sure how much I would have been able to articulate this at the time, but I had an emotional connection with the fact that it's a story about being lost.
Somewhere in a faraway land, my Odysseus might also meet a man.
These are very strange places, and none of them is really home, which was exactly how I felt at the time.
Well, today, Emily Wilson is a classicist, and she has just become the first woman ever to translate Homer's Odyssey into English. Now, translating from the ancient Greek has been an old boys' club for centuries, so this is a pretty big first. And Emily not only brought a feminist perspective to the job, she also set out to do a new kind of translation, one that sounds a lot more like the original Greek of Homer. When Steve Paulson asked her to read a bit from the beginning, they discovered that she had unfortunately forgotten to bring it with her to the studio. Luckily, that didn't stop her.
Andra moi enepe musa polutropon hos malapolla plankthe epeitroien hieron toliathrone persen.
Wow, that's beautiful. I mean, I have no idea. I mean, I'm looking at your translation here, but...
I just tried to roll my eyes. Roll my eyes.
Yeah, okay.
If you're looking at a copy, then I can have a go reciting it from what I remember, and then you can tell me if I got it wrong.
Okay, sure.
Tell me about a complicated man. Muse, tell me how he wandered and was lost when he had wrecked the holy town of Troy. And where he went and who he met, the pain he suffered in the storms at sea, and how he worked to save his life and bring his men back home. He failed, and for their own mistakes they died. They ate the sun god's cattle, and the god kept them from home. Now, goddess, child of Zeus, tell the old story for our modern times. Find the beginning.
Wow, you got it.
Okay, good.
Yeah, that was fantastic. Wow, I'm impressed.
Okay, thank you.
We don't need the internet.
I wish I would have done the whole thing in Greek from that. And actually, I almost have, but I know I would mess up a couple of times and it would drive me crazy remembering that I'd done that.
So a lot has been made of the fact that you are the first woman to translate the Odyssey, one of the foundational texts in Western literature. Many people say this is a major milestone. Do you see it that way?
It's hard for me to figure out exactly how I think the narrative should be put. I think in some ways it should be a story that's less about me than about why has it taken the English-speaking world so long before there's been a complete published translation of the Odyssey by a woman. Translations not just of the Odyssey but of Greek and Roman texts in general over the last few decades in particular have tended to be done by men and men of a particular demographic, the elderly white retired professor man.
So do you think you brought a different sensibility to your translation because you're a woman?
You know, I think that the statistical sample set of how many women have translated the Odyssey into English is so small that it's quite hard to make generalizations about gender in this context, you know? There's only me and Caroline Alexander, and we're entirely different from each other stylistically.
Let's talk about some of the gender dynamics in the story. Let's talk about some of the women in the Odyssey. One of the most fascinating characters of all, Odysseus' long-suffering wife, Penelope, waits 20 years for Odysseus to return while she is fending off a lot of abusive suitors who want to marry her. And, of course, he has been unfaithful in his marriage. She has not. What should we make of Penelope's story?
So I think the poem is constantly giving us this contrast between Odysseus' insistence that he can make 20 years go away and Penelope's insistence that time has mocked her and that she's different and that her marriage is defined by abandonment. Adultery has different implications because, of course, the household depends on the woman staying with a particular man, whereas he can have affairs outside of the house and it doesn't affect the house.
And then there is her rather complicated relationship with her own son, who is a teenager during virtually all these years that Odysseus is away, and he seems to want to put her in her place at times. At one point, even says, shut up, to his mother.
He says shut up twice when she's trying to get the singer to stop telling the unhappy stories about Troy because it makes her too sad. Telemachus tells her to shut up and go to her room. And then later, she tries to give orders about the contest with the bow that she's setting up to choose a new husband. Again, he says it's his job to do that, not her. Mary Beard has written about the first scene as the first instance in Western literature of a man telling a woman to shut up. I guess I also think it's important to notice that Penelope also herself shuts up her slave woman, Melantho, such that the suppression of women's voices also comes from other women.
Let me ask you about the slave women in the household as well, because there's a horrible scene near the end of the book, which I had never really been aware of until it was pointed out to me as I was reading about your translation. When Odysseus comes home, he tells Telemachus to kill all these other women in the palace. Tell us about that.
So Odysseus comes home and he slaughters, after a lot of planning, and again, we should always apologize for the spoiler alerts. After a lot of planning, he does succeed in killing all the suitors who, as you say, have been harassing his wife for years and years that he's been away. He kills them all. They're all piled up in the hall. And then there's a cleanup problem, which is who's going to scrub up all the blood off his lovely furniture. And of course, the slaves are there to help do that. So he instructs the slave women to do all the cleaning up. And then he has to clean up the slaves themselves. So he tells Telemachus and the henchmen to take long swords and slash all the life out of these women, the women who've been sleeping with the suitors. And Telemachus then takes initiative and, instead of hacking out their lives with swords, chooses to hang them with a single rope. And there's a powerful simile which compares them to birds that are trying to get home to go to bed in their roost. And instead they get caught in the net. So they're hanging there on the rope and their feet fluttered for a little while, but not for long.
That's just a horrifying image there. Now, there's also a question about translation here, because in some of the previous translations of the Odyssey, these slave women have been called either sluts or whores, and you do not use those words.
Yes. In several modern translations, Telemachus is made to say, I won't allow a clean death for these sluts, the suitors' whores. That's the Robert Fagles one. He says, you sluts, the suitors' whores. And there isn't a term of abuse in the original. They're described as the women who slept with the suitors. Of course, that's a particular cultural assumption, right? That in order to express anger at a woman, you have to call her a slut, even if the original language doesn't frame things in those terms.
I want to put your project of translating the Odyssey into a larger context here. There are certain issues that come up, especially violence against women, that maybe were kind of glossed over in the past. I know that in Ovid's Metamorphoses, there are a lot of rapes.
There are a lot of rapes, yes. And I think that is a change. I think it's extremely good for a lot of my colleagues who are aware that we can't have the same conversations about Ovid or about rapes in other works of classical literature, the rape of Cassandra, in the classroom that would involve not talking about it as violence. It's now forced on us by the 18-year-olds that we have to discuss it in an honest way that grapples with how ethically difficult it is.
The classics, it seems to me, have turned into a kind of battleground in the culture wars.
You're absolutely right. There are people who claim the Western canon belongs to white people or belongs to conservative people. There are fantasy readings of Homer and of other Greek and Roman classics which involve an idealizing of, back in ancient times, rape was fine, masculinity was all about being very macho, and everybody thought that was perfect back then, which of course relies on a very simplistic reading of the text, erasing quite a lot of what's actually there. It's all in the service of a particular political agenda. And then, of course, when people question that agenda, then those people are said to be social justice warriors who have a political agenda rather than saying what the truth is.
You're saying there is politics to the art of translation.
There's always politics, yes. And I also think it's funny how male translators are assumed not to have a politics. But of course, this is a political poem, regardless of who's translating it and regardless of whether they're male, female, or something else.
Yeah. Yes.
That's Emily Wilson, talking with Steve Paulson about her new translation of The Odyssey.